This is Sports Sunday.
I wonder if we could, like, set up an elaborate role-play scenario where we would just call in and give your best post-game question, and then I would be Ned Yost and try to answer them as well as I could.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Talk about Thoria's performance there in the third.
Talk about! Don't ask me a talk about question! I'm bleeping Ned Yost!
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Listen, I thought Jack really had a good outing. Welcome back, Sports Sunday. I'm Joshua Briscoe. You can tweet me. Tweet the show. Show's just me. At JB Briscoe on Twitter. If you have questions or topics you're particularly interested in having discussed. I'm now going to pivot. We spent about 15 minutes in the first segment about the Royals, and now I'm bored. And the Chiefs have had just simply a more interesting week. They had a round of organized team activities, in case you missed it. There was a bit of brouhaha about Eric Berry not being there, Marcus Peters, I think Derek Johnson, third? Can't remember. Maybe Justin Houston? Can't remember. I think it was actually Justin Houston. None of it matters, but that was a brouhaha. Eric Berry had sort of the largest brouhaha around his absence, I suppose. And I could sit here for a while and talk about how I think it's generally meaningless. Actually, I'm going to do that. And then Andy Reid is also going to help me explain this. But I actually think the discussion about, you know, why isn't Eric Berry at OTAs? Why isn't Justin Houston? Why isn't Marcus Peters, leaders of the defense? Why aren't they there? You can play both sides of this discussion. I'll do that a little bit. Now, I think if you're going to get really, really angry about Eric Berry not being there, and you're going to start wondering if it has some deeper meaning or something, I'm eventually going to check out of that. Because it is a voluntary camp. It just is. If he was holding out through training camp for some reason, then you can say, well, wait, what's going on here? He's missing mandatory things. But all three of those guys, Houston, Peters, and Berry, not at voluntary OTAs. And I think the argument to one side is to say, all the guys who are leaders of this defense should be there leading this defense. It's good for the young guys to see the top of the depth chart out there leading the charge. It's good for the whole team to see everyone else present. And those three guys are probably the most important defensive players on this team for next year and beyond. So I see that. I get it. If you're saying they just ought to be there, I get it. I do. You know, they're getting paid a lot of money, and they're the face of the defense. They're leaders of the defense. They're very important. And they shouldn't be pleased with how last season ended. I get it. I promise I understand where you're coming from. At the same time, if you're just like blindly furious, if you are hulking out over it, I can't follow you that far. I don't care that much. I can't be that fully bothered by it. And even Andy Reid seems to have the right attitude about it. He was asked a question about Gavin Escobar, one of the backup tight ends that will inexplicably get red zone targets over Travis Kelce for some reason. He got a very specific question about Gavin Escobar, which is usually the easiest type of question, I think, for a coach to answer. Say, hey, this new offensive player, what do you expect his role to be or whatever? He goes, oh, you know, want him to contribute to the team and blah, blah, blah. But Andy Reid couldn't even muster up the couldn't muster up the energy, the enthusiasm, I suppose, to deal with this question.
I know there's only so much that you can take away from what the guys are doing out here, but with Travis missing some time, other reps were available for guys. Escobar, just what have you seen from him the last few days and since he's been here?
I've got a friend here. This fly. It's driving me crazy. For the guys that aren't practicing, the guys that are in there, tight ends included, right, those are valuable reps. They're trying to make the team. And so when you open the door and somebody steps in, then you expect them to take advantage of that and do the best they can.
I mean, a fly just drove that question off of a cliff. And then Andy Reid decided to try to pull it back in by going, you know what, I expect guys who are getting snaps to snap them and to take them for what they're worth and to improve as they can and to take those experiences to heart. What was the question again? That attitude is pretty prevalent to me throughout OTAs. You're learning very little. I think you can learn some significant things in training camp. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Actually, we can talk about it now. There's interesting things there from Andy Reid and from Dee Ford that we'll get throughout the show today. There are some things you can learn from training camp. Something we covered last week a little bit, touched on just a little bit with Seth Kizer. He said, you know, looking back at previous years, whenever Laurent Duvernay-Tardif came in, whenever Mitch Morse came in, whenever a little bit when Zach Fulton came in, especially last year with Parker Anger, these rookies that the Chiefs had just drafted, they come into training camp, and the Chiefs don't play games with their reps. They don't pretend that they're just going to give it to the veteran in a situation whenever their future is clearly with a younger guy. Not the case at all with the quarterback position, obviously, because Patrick Mahomes isn't ready yet. But when it comes to those linemen or whatever, they're willing to just get that guy the most reps possible, which makes sense. That's the way you ought to do it. But a lot of teams, I think, are intent on trying to preserve a little bit of the ego of the older guy, are trying to preserve the illusion that there are no favorites. And, you know, to put a rookie in over the established guy, you're playing favorites. You're showing that you have a guy you want to win. And if that guy doesn't win the job, then all of a sudden you have egg on your face. If you put Mitch Morse in during training camp, as the Chiefs did, over Eric Kush, the guy who seemed like the successor, and then Eric Kush ends up getting the job, you're going to get guys from this radio station at training camp, like myself included, if I was allowed at training camp. That's not a jab. I'd love to be at training camp asking questions about what happened to Mitch Morse? Were you wrong about Mitch Morse? You're going to get guys in training camp peppering Andy Reid with questions about, wait a second, you drafted Mitch Morse highly. You went and gave him those first-team snaps in training camp. You telegraphed that Mitch Morse was supposed to be the guy to take over. Why is Eric Kush starting? And that didn't happen for Mitch Morse and Eric Kush. The Chiefs ended up cutting Eric Kush. I think he's in Tampa Bay still. And Mitch Morse has been fantastic. But that's the threat. The threat of telegraphing your position in training camp is if it goes backwards, if your favorite ends up losing the job, then you've got to answer for it. But the Chiefs have been, more or less, unafraid to do that. Beards is informing that Eric Kush is now in Chicago. I think he went to Tampa Bay from Kansas City. None of it matters. None of it matters. Good producing by Beards. I don't actually care anymore.
There are like five teams in between.
Really? You bounced around that much?
Kansas City, Carolina, Houston, St. Louis, Chicago.
Wow, that's shocking. I did not know he was on that many teams. I still don't care anymore.
Well, there's a lot of sign and releases.
I assumed as much.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was actually 10 years ago that move happened. Thank you, Beards. But if you telegraph your position and then you end up getting made to look foolish you've got to deal with the pushback. But Andy Reid, John Dorsey's team, has not been afraid to do that. So we are going to learn some things in training camp. I think we're going to see Kareem Hunt get more snaps with the first team and get more snaps in general than your average Chiefs pundit, if that really exists, is going to expect. I think he's going to be a significant part of the offensive game plan in training camp. Sorry for the long pause. I had to sneeze. I'm still allergic to everything in the air. Spring and summer are Satan's seasons. The other thing we're going to learn in training camp is what the Chiefs actually think they have, in Terrence Mitchell. He was the out-of-nowhere MVP of the defense last year. Not the actual MVP, but the MVP who came in. The guys you expect nothing from and then become a huge part of the operation. Terrence Mitchell crushed that last year. Late in the season, up against really good competition, he was fantastic. Opposite Marcus Peters. The Chiefs had a void there. He filled it. And Andrew talked about this a little bit, that, you know, they're looking to see how he does whenever teams have film to prepare for him. It was a little bit non-committal, but I'm much more interested in what we see as far as first team snaps than I am about what Andy Reid says in way of what's your number two cornerback position look like. Now, the Chiefs do have a really interesting depth there. They have Terrence Mitchell and Philip Gaines and Steven Nelson, the guy they just drafted, and DJ White. They have depth, but they don't have a clear second starter, unless you give that to Terrence Mitchell, which I think the Chiefs more or less did by not drafting a corner highly in this year's draft. I expected them to address the position relatively early, to have another option, another guy that you could potentially bring in. They tried to do it last year with Kavari Russell. That was a disaster. I mean, just a huge flub. But they didn't even touch it this year, early on. And I think that's a vote of confidence in Terrence Mitchell. That's something I'm going to be watching closely whenever training camp comes around, though. The other thing we have to deal with is the outside linebacker position. The outside linebacker position is, more than anything, the position of highest flammability on either side of the spectrum here. The most volatile position for the Chiefs, for better or for worse, is an outside linebacker. I would argue that the biggest questions about this team are the outside linebacker position whenever you are honest with how far the pendulum can swing in either direction. Because that position is packed with talent. And it's also got a pretty low floor if a couple of things break in the wrong direction. Frankly, in a direction that we saw for a lot of last year. Last year, Tom Bahali looked old and hurt at the end of the season. Dee Ford looked slow and hurt. Justin Houston was hurt, with a few exceptions. And not particularly effective, with a few exceptions. Dee Ford was great in the first half of the year, and then fell apart in the second half. And the Chiefs picked up Dee Ford's fifth-year option, so they've got him through this season and next season. And this is Tom Holly's last year, certainly, because of the cap, the way that his contract plays out next season. They're paying him like $8 million. It costs nothing to cut him. He won't be here next year, at least not with this deal. And Justin Houston is here getting paid huge money. But Dee Ford is the guy that I think has the most questions in way of what is he actually capable of? Because we've seen Justin Houston and Tom Bahali both be elite pass rushers consistently. I mean, we've seen them have tops in the league type seasons. We've seen bursts from Dee Ford. But earlier this week, Dee Ford was asked about his hot start and cold finish to the season last year, and he had an interesting answer.
It was just inconsistency. There were high points and there were low points. But the ultimate deal, I just wasn't healthy. And that's the ultimate goal heading into this year, is just to be more consistent. You know, you're going to tweak things and get better at things as you go. But the ultimate goal is to be healthy so you can execute those things.
This makes sense with what a lot of us have been saying since the halfway point last season. A lot of things happened at once for D4 that could be used as attribution for his fall off of a cliff in the second half. He had the hamstring injury about halfway through the year. Justin Houston came back about halfway through the year, and Dee Ford switched sides. And maybe the league caught up to him. You know, there are at least three realistic reasons that last year could have gone the way it did. Now, it also seems like that would probably be the one that Dee Ford would be most likely to cop to. If all three are a little bit true, it would probably be easiest to just say, yeah, I wasn't healthy. He also said I wasn't healthy and I wasn't consistent. Which I guess he's saying is building off his lack of health. But the real problem with that answer is, okay, last year the problem was the injury. I can buy that. I'm totally okay with that as reasoning. But now what? How do you fix that? What do you do this year to keep that from happening again? And you can't really prevent injury. You can't really fix injury. We all understand how that works. Sometimes injuries just happen. And if you believe that's the only problem, then I guess you can leave it there. But Danny Klingscale asked Dee Ford about the fact that he seemed more comfortable on one side of the field than the other. Ford spent most of his time on the right side of the defense last season, or throughout his career. But whenever he went back to the left side, when Justin Houston was out last season, he was fantastic. And then he struggled whenever he flipped back. So this is what Ford said whenever Danny asked him about the side switching.
I do different moves on the right side than I do on the left. But I can rush on both sides.
He can rush from both sides. He does different moves. I don't know what that means. I mean, maybe I understand doing different moves as a defensive lineman. That's not confusing to me. That's not the part I'm having trouble with. I'm wondering why that can't translate to both sides. Also, he spent most of his career on the side that he was worse at last year. And that's really confusing. He ought to be more comfortable on the right side of the defense. Now, that also means going up against the left tackle, generally the best offensive lineman. Certainly the better of the two offensive tackles. But he should be more comfortable on that right side. Justin Houston goes up against the right tackle almost all the time. He lines up on the left side of the defense almost all the time. But whenever Ford went over there, Ford was more successful. But it was actually the last question to Dee Ford and his answer that really, truly inspired me.
How much have you added to your repertoire as far as moves go?
I haven't added too much. I'm trying to master what I do. I haven't mastered the moves that I already do, so I'm not going to add anything.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That ended up being the last question of the interview. No one even had a follow-up to that. I left all the awkward silence in on that cut because I felt like it pretty much summarized how it made everyone feel, or at least how it made me feel. Dee Ford's played in 48 games in his career. Now, I'm not saying you have to be a fully formed product, but you've got to have something there. His rookie season, he didn't start. He started 5 games in 2015. He started 14 games in 2016. And I think he started 2 of those playoff games. To say that you still haven't mastered the stuff you've been working on since 2014 just isn't very encouraging. It bothers me, not in a way where it's like, well, what have you been doing? What have you not been trying? That it doesn't bother me in any sort of metric of like Dee Ford's effort or anything. That's silly. I have no questions there. Is even in the most cynical possible way of looking for motivation, he's trying to get a big contract. And the way that he talks about becoming a better football player, I believe him. I believe that he's trying to develop and trying to master what he's doing. But it's got to really frustrate you as a fan or as one of the Chiefs coaches. It's got to be really frustrating to hear Dee Ford say, I'm not ready to add anything. I haven't mastered what I'm doing already. Whenever what he's doing already has been inconsistent and not all that productive, especially not from the side that he's actually supposed to be playing at. He had 10 sacks last year. I wish I had the game log up right now. I don't. I'm not going to go find it right now because it would require so much stumbling around. But almost all of those came in Justin Houston's absence. When he was on the left side of the defense, going up against the right tackle, doing his different moves on that side. And it was also, again, in fairness, that was pre-hamstring injury. All of this can be true. All of these can be factors. But I'm very confident that Justin Houston's problems are injury related. Because he has missed huge chunks of football because of his knee injury. I'm very confident that Tambaha Lee's problems are because he's getting older. And he's actually been a little more efficient than I think most of us, including myself, have given him credit for. He hasn't made a ton of big plays. He hasn't even made pulled down a ton of sacks recently. But he hasn't been a huge liability. He just hasn't been Tambaha Lee as we've known him. Because we saw the prime of a future Chiefs Hall of Famer. But I can't figure out, no one can figure out, what the actual problem with Dee Ford is. Dee Ford said it was the injury. He also said he uses different moves on different sides of the offensive line. He also says he's not adding anything new to his game. He's still trying to master what he's currently doing. And maybe he has the best plan in the history of outside linebackers. And whenever he decides that he can master that, all the problems will go away. Maybe. But I'm not super optimistic about it. I can't. I can't fully talk myself into D. Ford, the guy who simply needs to stay healthy this year. If you can, great. But I'm afraid that's not going to be able to be me. (913) 310-810 is the phone number if you want to call in. There are a lot of potential factors. And I think they're probably all playing a little bit of a part. And I'm all for being patient with rookies also. I'm never the first person or one of the first 50% of people to be at the neck, at the throat of a rookie or first or second year guy or third year guy even saying, okay, time to produce. D. Ford's been here a while. And we said last year is going to be big. This year is going to be bigger. Because Tom Bahali is trending in one direction. He's trending towards being a very expensive part-time player. Justin Houston is going to simply have to be better and, you know, more present on the field. Again, that's something he can't control in any way, the health of his knee. But he's going to come back. I mean, people say all the time it takes 2 years to fully be back from a catastrophic knee injury. He'll be right in that zone. I'm ready to be optimistic about Justin Houston, but I'm not quite there yet for D. Ford. And none of that really inspired confidence in me, if you can believe it. The other thing that unnerves me about D. Ford's progress, I suppose, is that we're not going to know if it actually exists or not until, like, week four. You're not going to see anything in training camp. You know what? This is the year for D. Ford. This is when it finally happens. I hope it's all injury-based, but I don't have the actual confidence to say that it is. Andy Reid said a couple of interesting things also during OTAs, as I mentioned earlier. One question came about Tyler Bray and the quarterback depth chart. It's gotten some conversation lately about how Patrick Mahomes is the third guy on the depth chart. Tyler Bray is number two. That doesn't surprise me. Shouldn't surprise anybody who knows how the Chiefs generally work. But Reid was asked specifically about Tyler Bray as the number two quarterback, and Reid didn't back Bray as much as I expected him to.
You guys invested so much in drafting Patrick. You know, you made it clear Alex is a starter, but, you know, does Tyler have, like, a legitimate opportunity here to hold on to that number two job throughout the season, too?
Yeah, well, I tell you, he's going to compete. That's what he does. And so, but he's got to do that, right? So that's the unknown right now, but he's earned the right to be in that position. And so now he's got to maintain it.
Not a ringing endorsement. So, you know, he's the guy who's currently present, and now he's got to stay ahead of Mahomes. Usually Reid seems to be a little more willing, especially at the quarterback position, to just sort of give to the guy who's there already. To give the benefit of the doubt, to give the lead, to give the backup position. I think that's something else will be very interesting in camp to see if and when Patrick Mahomes overtakes Tyler Bray on the depth chart in the third or second team snaps. That's when I could actually see going either way still. Even though Tyler Bray, you know, could save $1.3 million by getting released.